Welcome to Monday Morning, Evan Bray. Great to have you here. Hope you had a good weekend. There's lots of good through that weekend, that's for sure. Even though the temperature dipped a little bit, I know farmers trying to get that harvest done. Splash of rain happened Friday and Saturday for some, so slowed things down for the last little bit. More and more, I'm seeing people on social media wrapping up, showing that final harvest picture, right? The smile, the wave, the sunset, whatever it might be. Everybody's got their own way of signaling we're done harvest. Not everybody there yet, but the last couple of weeks here should get things cleaned up, and the weather actually looking pretty good as we go through this week. It was cold this morning, no doubt about it. Today, high wind, maybe a little bit of drying, but by the time we get to tomorrow, it should be a lot better there too. Hey, green and white prognostications. That's the way we ended the show on Friday, is we give you a chance to call in and let us know who you think is going to win the game between the Riders and Friday night Ottawa Red Blacks. What the score will be, the person with the closest combined score with the right team winning wins. We know the actual score was 20-13 for the Riders. So total of 33. Our green and white prognostication winner this week, Dennis in Regina. Congratulations, Dennis. A score of 25-10 in favor of the Riders. So his total 35. He was the closest, which means his name is entered in that end of the season grand prize cash draw. We will be playing again on Friday of this week. Toronto is in town to play the Riders, the Argos here. Is this going to be win number 12 on the season for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders? Well, we'll get your thoughts on that as we get closer too. Speaking of sports, we can't not talk about the Jays. What a win. What a couple of wins. Big win on Saturday, 10-1. Then yesterday, I couldn't even believe it. I actually missed a little bit of the start of the game. So when I tuned in, it was like something like 7-0 or something like that. They go on to win 13-7. And the Yankees, I said this earlier, I mean, the Yankees are no slouch. Aaron Judge, they've got a strong team, but boy, the Jays' bats are hot. Their pitching is hot. It just all in all, I mean, they were literally firing on all cylinders over the weekend. They head to New York tomorrow night for game 3. A couple of games now in New York. Of course, they would love to wrap it up quickly in the next game and get ready for the next round. I don't even want to project, is this their year again? But many people already are saying you had the Joe Carter home run, you had Jose Bautista's bat flip, now Vladdy's grand slam home run that happened yesterday. Rivals some of those big Blue Jays moments, and will be one that will go down for sure. And who knows, there's still more incredible moments to write during the Major League playoffs. So exciting times for Jays fans as well. Okay, so what do you want to talk about? Phone lines are officially open. Text lines are open for you. 1-877-332-8255. There are a number of things that we could talk about. By the way, this past weekend, the NDP, the Saskatchewan NDP, held their convention. They do a leadership review. Carla Beck gets an 87% approval rating, the highest post-election leadership review in NDP party history in this province. So we know the NDP doubled their seats in the ledge after this last election. They came close to a sweep in both Regina and Saskatoon, all but for one seat in Saskatoon. They caught those two big urban centers. They held over the weekend what they called a premiers in waiting discussion with Merritt Stiles, who is the NDP leader in Ontario, and Naheed Nenshi, who is the NDP leader in Alberta, and of course Carla Beck, the leader here in Saskatchewan. They called it the Premiers in Waiting meeting. And as we know, they've also appointed Ron Stiles as the transition officer for when the 2028 election happens and they transition into office to run this province. So the NDP are confident. Are you confident that that's going to happen? Is this a momentum wave from the last election that is carrying them into power in 2028 or whenever we have the next provincial election? Or does the SAS party regain some of those seats that they lost in the two big cities? So that's one topic. 1-877-332-8255. Text lines open. Fan lines because I'm looking at a text here from people talking about fans of the Blue Jays. Text line open and phone line open. So that's topic one. Topic two, Prime Minister Mark Carney in Washington to meet with Donald Trump. Now, this is the second time officially that Mark Carney as Prime Minister has gone down to Washington for these meetings. The first time, I think everyone expected it was not likely to result in any significant trade agreement, any significant change to the tariff situation, because the first time was a bit of a get to know one another. And so maybe you remember, we chatted about it on this show, about how he did, what was his body language like, what was Trump's body language like. It was all about an assessment of the relationship. Tomorrow's meeting, I'm going to suggest, is a lot different. There's expectations now. These two leaders, according to Mark Carney, have a texting relationship. So they are in conversation regularly. There is no reason why they can't, after their meeting tomorrow, hold a joint news conference and announce some changes, some agreements that they've made. And I'm going to suggest that walking away from tomorrow's meeting without any sign of a deal, of a change, is going to be seen as a failure. Do you agree? Or do you think, no, this is a long process and you have to finesse your way through it and don't expect any big news from tomorrow's meeting? I don't think that way. I do expect something. I don't expect they're going to sit down with a new draft of CUSMA, which is the Canadian, U.S. and Mexico agreement, basically the North American trade agreement. But don't kid yourself, Donald Trump is putting together what he considers the building blocks of that new CUSMA agreement with every agreement he makes. So if they do come to some sort of an agreement tomorrow, I would expect that those are going to be principles that will carry through. Those aren't going to be just temporary pieces in place until CUSMA is negotiated. It will actually become part of the agreement. But I'm going to go back to what I said. I feel like the rubber has to hit the road on this issue. Mark Carney has to come away from tomorrow's meeting with something. He needs something in hand to say to the Canadian people, okay, here we go. We've fostered the relationship. I met him the first time down in Washington. We've since talked at the G7 meeting in Kananaskis. We've talked at UN and NATO meetings. I've got a texting relationship with this fella. I can come away with an agreement. Remember, Mark Carney holds himself out as a person who does these high-level negotiations, has dealt with difficult financial discussions over the years. The rubber has to hit the road. We need an agreement, or we need something to show forward positive steps for the Canadian people, for Canadian businesses. And if it doesn't come out of tomorrow's meeting, what? What then? Do you continue to give grace, or do you say, sorry, that was a test that needed to be passed? 1-877-332-8255. Phone lines are open for you. Text lines are open for you. I've given you a couple of good ones there, right? Does Carney need a deal? Are Carla Beck and the NDP poised to win the next election? I mean, they are clearly showing confidence. They've named a transition officer. They're basically picking out office furniture. Is that going to come to fruition? 1-877-332-8255. Happy to talk about that. And I haven't even got into Leach and Barber. Their sentencing discussion will be happening tomorrow. At least that's the date likely. Also tomorrow, 2 years since Hamas attacked Israel, and we know peace talks are happening today. Will we see an agreement there? Are we likely to see a ceasefire, an exchange of hostages, a laying down of arms by Hamas, a withdrawal from Gaza by Israel? I'm not holding my breath, but I'm happy to talk about that too. Text lines are open. Phone lines are open. It's a busy Monday morning. Lots to talk about. Let's take a break and we'll come back here on 980 CJME and 650.
They're going to have a tough time beating British Columbia, and Winnipeg's playing a lot better than we are.
Don't forget that the Rough Riders have a BW. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, it was a win for the Riders. I said earlier that I'm not too hung up on the fact that it was a bit of a lackluster game. The Riders won 20-13. Cameron in Regina scolding me on the text line. Fans, including you, Evan, keep saying a win is a win anytime the Riders prevail, forgetting that it's also supposed to be entertainment. I couldn't even watch the second half of that game. Hashtag hot garbage, Cameron in Regina. Okay. I don't think it was hot garbage. I mean, gosh, what a strike with the, you know, opening it with a touchdown. I love that. Love that. Running back AJ Ouellette, short yardage team, of course. Tommy Stevens is out with a knee injury, plunged in from 1 yard out. Love that. How about the pick six? Yes, it came in the next quarter, the first play of the second quarter. But those are exciting plays. Yes, I know we had, 84 yards on the opening drive, and then I think 87 yards on the next seven drives after that. So, yeah, it slowed down a bit. And we had some kicking problems. So I'll give you that as well. Many people were calling for a new kicker to replace Brett Lawther. Brett is out this game with a back injury. As a result, Campbell Fair comes in. He didn't attempt a field goal, but missed both of his convert attempts. So, Riders did convert, by the way, one two-point attempt, as we know. Pass throw from Harris to Ajoa Joe. Anyway, I am still on the a win is a win. It's good to have a win, 20-13. But Cameron, thank you for putting me in my place. Thank you for keeping me in check. 1-877-332-8255. Happy to hear from you if you want to give me a shout. Phone lines are open. In fact, let's go to Ken in Saskatoon. How are you today, Ken?
Oh, I'm on my way to go golfing at Rostern Valley and thought, well, I'll just call on in. And
I like it. What's that course? Party. What's that course like, Ken?
Oh, it's gorgeous. About 20 years, they switched it from 9 holes to 18 holes. Nice wide fairways. And it's just a beautiful Saskatchewan golf course at a regional park.
There's
a million of them in this province.
I love it, and I love that you're squeezing in all the golf you can get. So good on you. Okay, I know you want to talk Carney and Washington this visit. What are your thoughts?
Okay, a few of them. First of all, you have to some perspective. The Liberals have never been able to successfully negotiate with the, something with the United States. The CUSMA was negotiated between the United States and Mexico because Canada was being so just unreasonable. So they negotiated it. They gave Trudeau a phone call and said, hey, here's the deal. Sign on or don't sign on. That's up to you. So that's what happened at that case. And I think what's going to happen here is that there's a thing called asymmetrical negotiations. When somebody is way more powerful than you, what you have to do is figure out what the core of what that other person wants is. And you just have to give it to them. You have to make sure they get what they want. I haven't heard anything where Carney understands the security concerns, things like steel and aluminum and some of these other concerns regarding dairy, and goes, oh, yes, those, we understand why you would have those concerns. Let's take a look and see what we can do on that. Then you kind of work away with the rest of stuff. You know what he's had come to Ottawa? Opponents of Trump. Tons of opponents of Trump. Sure, that'll make you feel look really good in Trump's eyes. So the only good thing with Carney is his paid-for media will take whatever happens, and there'll be so much propaganda making it a success.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts, Ken, because, I mean, I'm saying, and I'm going to say it again, to me, it's not a success unless they come away with something. If they come away with good news, we've, you know, agreed to remove tariffs on steel and aluminum, automotive agreement, steps, building blocks for CUSMA, whatever it looks like, something that shows we're making forward momentum. Anything less than that, anything less than if what we hear is the typical, we had two good days of meetings. We talked about joint concerns. I understand their position and we're committed to continue to work together. Fail. 1-877-332-8255. Okay, we're going to switch topics. I want to go to Jason, who's on the line from Weyburn. I asked the question. I mean, the NDP overwhelmingly showed their continued support for Carla Beck, 87% this weekend at their convention. That's the highest post-election leadership review in party history. We know that they increased the number of seats in the ledge in the last election. They've now appointed Ron Stiles as the transition officer for when they form government in 2028. Are they going to? Jason, what do you think?
They got a good shot, but their path to victory is more difficult than the SAS parties, is how the tables have turned there. The SAS party dominates any rural Saskatchewan except for those two north seats. So those two north seats go to the NDP. City of Regina, call it Fortress Regina. It was that way in the early 2000s. I think it's that way again. And Fortress Saskatoon has got one basically beachhead for the SAS party where they kept one seat. But if the NDP wins all Regina, all Saskatoon, and they nearly did, the two north seats, and then they win PA's two seats and Moose Jaw's two seats, you're looking at a two-seat majority for the NDP.
Mm-hmm. And you think that's a possibility?
I do think it's a possibility. Everyone knows where they're strong and knows where they're weak. A lot of attention's going to get put on, in my opinion, Moose Jaw and Prince Albert, because I think that is the battleground. Mm-hmm. I was surprised, actually, that the NDP did so poorly in both of those cities. The one NDP seat in North PA can flip back and forth and has over the last few years. I think that one's gone, but the South PA seat is one to watch, and then Moose Jaw is definitely one to watch, though Moose Jaw has been strong SAS party for a long time since Brad Wall, but let's go back in time. Moose Jaw was very strong for the NDP at one time. Though I will say something, Weyburn used to be very strong for the NDP, and they don't have a snowball's chance in hell of winning here.
I've seen a couple of texts on the text line saying, why are we talking about election? Seems premature. I mean, I would agree. 2028 is a long ways away if that's when our next provincial election is. But the NDP have really stood up and said, we're winning the next election. And they've done it on a variety of different fronts. I'm asking you if you think that's valid. Is that the way the momentum is going, or are the SAS party winning back some of those urban seats and continuing to serve as government of this province? Just one of a few topics we're talking about. We'll take our next break and come back. Open Lines continues here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
I think they have to settle down and get moving a bit better than what they are.
After winning the Banjo Bowl, felt like they won their Grey Cup at that point.
One more win, first place, Western Final at home. I think that's pretty darn good.
Yeah, the Riders won 20-13. They beat the Ottawa Red Blacks, who, of course, we know as bottom of the barrel in the league. So the Riders, top of the league, should have won that game. Some people frustrated that it didn't fire on all cylinders, wasn't as strong of a win as it could have been. There's definitely some missteps, and I know the coach, Corey Mace, talked a bit about that in some of the post-game interviews. Jamie Locker and the crew will be talking about this more this afternoon on the Green Zone, and of course, Riders now have to get set for and ready for the Toronto Argonauts, who are in town Friday night. So the build will be towards that, shore up some of the mistakes, and hopefully get things back pointed in the right direction for the Riders. Okay, so we're talking about a lot of different things. The NDP discussion, I mean, I brought this up. Many people say, well, why are we even talking about this? The next election, likely not until about 2028. This past weekend, the NDP held their convention. They did, they did a leadership review, which is pretty standard. And Carla Beck got an approval rating of 87%. I saw a text asking how many people were there. 600 is the answer to that. So roughly 600 people there and voting. NDP, yeah, they made some strides after the last election. They doubled the number of seats in the ledge. They came close to a sweep of Regina and Saskatoon. They have those two northern ridings. But is this the momentum that's going to carry them forward? They've even announced, in fact, they did that on Friday, that they've appointed Ron Stiles as their transition officer for when they form government after the next election. Is this optimism? Is this self-fulfilling prophecy? Is this fact? Cameron in Regina, Carla Beck, can assume all she wants that the NDP will win in 2028, but dividing lines between urban and rural centers remain clear, and SAS Party still won the popular vote by 14 points last November. Not exactly that close, was it? Says Cameron in Regina. 1-877-332-8255. Dean in Kamsack said, I think the Saskatchewan NDP are getting a bit ahead of themselves. The Sask Party, I believe, is going to regain a few of the seats in Regina and Saskatoon in the next election, especially if Scott Moe decides he's stepping down in the next year or two. His time is likely almost up as party leader. The NDP need to break into rural Saskatchewan to win, and that is not going to happen with many of their current policies. Dean in Kamsack. Okay, on the other topic that I brought up very briefly this morning is it's expected that tomorrow we should hear the sentencing decision for the convoy leaders, Tamara Leach and Chris Barber. Justice Heather Perkins McVeigh is set to announce tomorrow. It's scheduled for tomorrow. Unless something happens that prevents that, we should know tomorrow what the sentence is. Now, we have seen, and it's laughable what the Crown is looking for, 7 years. 7 years for Tamara Leach, 8 for Chris Barber. Now, we've talked about some tough, too lenient sentences in the last few months on this program, and every one of them has been in correspondence with things like serious assaults, sexual assaults and rapes, even ag assaults and murder, manslaughter charges, that 7 and 8 years is a bit of a head scratcher. I have no idea why prosecution, I feel like the Crown is losing credibility in this case by asking for that much. Now, defense is saying, look, we've got all these hundreds of letters of support for their clients who are saying that the protests changed their lives. They stood up for thousands of people. They believed and instilled human dignity and freedoms, were compromised by government-mandated vaccinations. So there's a throng of people behind these two. And that, by the way, doesn't even get into the discussion about Chris Barber's truck, which is stupid that they would even think that they need to keep this as a piece of evidence. You keep a piece of evidence if you want to, number one, prevent the continuation of an offense. Number two, maybe you need it for court purposes. But, I mean, there's absolutely no reason for that. So that's a whole other topic. But at the end of the day, let us not forget this. Here's two points I want to make, and then I'll go to the phone lines. But Pat King, who was another prominent convoy figure who openly celebrated the gridlock but caused by the convoy. He resisted efforts to move trucks out of residential areas, got a 3-month conditional sentence plus credit for his time served. So if you're looking at that as something that might set a precedent for this, Tamara Leach did 19 days in jail plus another 30 for breach of her bail conditions. 49 days in jail. And again, Pat King, 3-month conditional sentence plus credit for time served. So, I mean, I will be shocked if this sentencing becomes anything substantial. I mean, we know Chris Barber's lawyer is calling for an absolute discharge, which would mean no additional jail time and no criminal record. But we'll see where that goes. What do you think? What do you expect to happen there? Let's go to Bonnie in Wadena. Bonnie, your thoughts on this sentencing that could come down tomorrow?
Yeah. Well, I think they shouldn't get any more than time served. And if they do get time, it will be a clear signal to everyone that we need to get this liberal authoritarian government out of power. If you want to freedom to protest, you're not going to get it with the liberal government. And if you want the right to freedom of speech, you're not going to get it with them. They were 3 weeks at the parliament and never got a voice with the government.
The interesting thing too, this is a whole other side note to this, but I mean, certainly the sentencing will be another factor in this, is how this sort of criminal consequences are held to others who protest. How many times are we seeing protests across Canada that can turn violent? And yeah, I mean, I will agree, and you can make the argument here in the convoy. Some of the people who took it too far and broke the law were people that were there as agitators to work on their own. Most protests have that, right? Look at the ostrich protest. Everyone was pointing out to me last week when I brought this up. A guy puts a balaclava on, goes over and douses a neighbor's house in gasoline. 72-year-old woman who lives alone comes out of her house. He douses her with gas as well. And people are saying, wow, he's an agitator. He's a one-off. That doesn't speak to the group of people that are there. Well, we've got two examples here in Tamara Leach and Chris Barber, who are being held accountable for the actions of the group. So are there any accountability consequences for other protests, other groups of civil disobedience where it causes problems? And what's the follow-through look like there? So you know there are going to be a number of people waiting to see. And I would suggest some opportunities have already passed us by where the organizers of a protest that could have been held accountable weren't, even though there was allegations of criminal law breaking. 1-877-32-8255. Happy to take your call. Let's go to Edwin in Regina. We're talking Tamara Leach, Chris Barber. Tomorrow we might see the sentencing. It's likely expected at some point tomorrow. Edwin, what do you expect to see play out here?
I expect that they'll get the full, they'll get the hammer from the Liberal Party. But I hear people complaining that we're losing our rights. There's one way to fix that. Just vote to separate. We're done with this.
You think a vote to separate is going to change it?
Oh, if we're out of here, we won't have to put up with this. We can make our own laws.
Well, we have people in our provinces here, too, that are protesting, that are breaking laws. To me, I don't know that separating is going to get us away from this. I know I'm seeing a number of people on the text line saying this should be another reason to signal a change in federal government, although we're a ways away from that election happening as well. Okay, let's take our last break. Open lines continues until 10 o'clock. There are a couple of things that people have shared on open lines that are outside of some of the ideas that I throw out. One fellow wants to talk about bats. We can read that text when we come back. 1-877-332-8255. Open text, open phones for you till 10 here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Got a text on the text line from Cal in Oxbow. Says, hey there, Evan and Frank. Bautista and Vladdy's hits and home runs are nice moments, but nothing hold a candle to Joe Carter. We all remember that home run. Boy, those were the exciting days for the Blue Jays, and we've had moments and glimmers since then, but this year could be the year. Hey, I wanted to mention this busy weekend. This weekend, lots of different things going on. I was at the big sports card and collectibles show, which was in Saskatoon yesterday. But on Saturday, I was down in Regina for the big India Night celebration. So this is put on by Cultural Connections. Renu Kapoor, Ronnie, there's a number of people that are involved in this committee. They raise thousands, tens of thousands of dollars every year, hundreds of thousands of dollars for different community organizations. And it was Creative Options Regina, who do incredible work in the city of Regina when it comes to ensuring quality of life for people with some form of disability. And they, yeah, it's really worth checking out the work they do at Creative Options Regina. But congratulations to Cultural Connections. I think the total was $170,000 raised. It's a big night, 750 people at the Delta in Regina. So congrats to them. I was happy to be there for that. Congrats on the great success there. I mentioned there's a number of texts that are coming in that are off the topics that we've been talking about. So Donna in Harris said, here it is, Evan. My subject is the bats. About a year ago, a family begged to have bats removed from their home. We remember that because we covered it here on the radio station. But the officials said, nope, we can't help you. They're protected. You can't harm them. You can't remove them. Well, now rabies is being detected in bats. Will the authorities be held responsible if that family gets bit? Donna from Harris with the text. Kind of scary, if I'm being honest. I mean, I've never been afraid of bats in my life. You just kind of accept the fact that they do some great things for the environment. They eat a ton of mosquitoes, all that kind of stuff. But when we hear about the story from last week, I mean, the first there was the Warman story where a bat was discovered. It was deceased, but it was tested and found to have rabies. Then a person in Martinsville is bit by a bat. Many say trying to protect its babies. He goes and has the shots and he's going to be fine. Now there's been a couple more cases around the Saskatoon area with bats found with rabies. So, yeah, I think it's fair comment, fair question. Thank you so much for the text. Also, Dave in Regina said, I've texted this in before. Any progress in finding out what is going on with the Regina police chief situation and the former city of Regina city manager? I think, Dave, the city of Regina manager position is done. I think they've agreed to their parting ways. A payout happened there. The police chief, what's going on with Farouk Sheikh, is still up in the air. And every time we have the mayor, Chad Baczynski, on the program, we ask. Every time he says, I don't know, the investigation is going on, I have nothing to report. I at one time said, well, surely we're going to hear before the end of the year. And his reaction told me that, yeah, he thought the end of the year was ridiculous to even be looking that far. We're 3 months away. We're in October already. So we have both mayors on the program here again in the next couple of weeks. So when we have that conversation, we will ask for an update on that. At this point, we don't have any new information on what's going on with the Regina Police Service chief. Lots of texts on the, I threw the question out there. Does the NDP have what it takes to win the next provincial election? Because as a result of their convention and this restored or confirmed faith by those who voted in the highest post-election leadership review in party history, Carla Beck got an approval rating of 87% over the weekend. They have appointed a fellow by the name of Ron Stiles to be named as the transition officer for their 2028 election win. They're predicting it. Many people online weighing in. Are they getting ahead of themselves? Dave says, if the NDP win in Sask and we still have a Liberal government, I'm moving. I can't afford to keep working past the age of 65. Ari from Saskatoon says, here's a question. If the NDP hired a transition officer, does that come out of a party fund or taxpayer money? I'm guessing it's got to be a party fund because it's not it's not an official position. It's a position within the NDP. That's a good question to ask Carla Beck the next time we have her on the program. Thank you to everyone that joined in. By the way, Jace, I didn't read this yet, but I'm going to try and squeeze it in because he's putting me in a corner here. He says, I find it hard to believe the NDP could actually win an election and form government. The old farmers and small towners and people like yourself, Evan, who are stuck in their old ways, no matter what, only one voting one way will happen. I'm young, so I only ever remember the SAS party being in power in my 22 to 23 years of life. Jace, thank you for calling me an old person. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Today's Monday, which means the Roundtable of Justice. Impaired driving is our discussion. In fact, later on during the hour of discussion on impaired driving, we will open up the lines for your questions as well here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.